Hey everybody, another week, another podcast. As always, I'm Craig Eastman, coming to you from just outside Liverpool, and in Glasgow is Scott Morris.
Hello!
And in Brighton's in Falkirk is Drew Tavendale.
How do?
Bloody bloody blah, blah blah blah. Pride and Glory is the first major cinema release for director Gavin O'Connor, whose previous works are mostly comprised of TV affairs. It's come from the pen of Joe Carnahan, who was the man responsible for my favourite film of 2002, Narc, but also the man responsible for the risible Smoking Aces, so a bit of a mixed career there. It's the story of a generation of New York cops, one of whom discovers a conspiracy which implicates his NYPD brother-in-law and threatens to not only tear apart their family, but also the whole of the New York Police Department. Scott, it looks like it should be a reasonable film, given the cast listing there, an impressive cast. Is it worth a watch?
Sadly, no. It is an impressive cast, but they're all in sort of very bad form. It's more of the Ed Norton that showed up for The Incredible Hulk than the actual good Ed Norton, who I struggle to remember these days. The problem with this film is it doesn't really seem to know exactly what it's aiming for. At points, it's trying to be a investigative police procedural as Ray Tierney, Ed Norton's character, tries to uncover what's going on in the corruption of the police force, and then at times it kind of loses that completely and just decides to be more of a character study of this family of cops. And it sort of falls halfway between the two, and it doesn't really work as either.
It's not really an original plot device either, is it? The sort of the family of cops and sort of torn between allegiances and blah-de-blah-de-blah.
No, there's not really an original bone in its body.
Following on from his excellent performance in Bruges, is this another decent Colin Farrell showing, or does it resort back to silly accents and shouting?
That would pretty much cover it.
Ah, maybe I have seen this film.
This film is just not particularly interesting. It's fairly well produced, but it's remarkably tedious, and there's very little of any interest that happens in it. I mean, it's about, what, 2 hours and 15 minutes or something, and at no point does Vinnie Jones hammer out Ted Raimi's eyeballs, so I don't think there's anything to recommend in this film at all. Certainly, there's nothing here that's covered in ways that you wouldn't see in damn near any episode of NYPD Blue, which will do the same thing a lot better in a far shorter time frame than this, which just drags on and on and on, and it's just very dull.
Yeah, and some very curious choices too. For instance, having a sick dying wife for no reason whatsoever, it seems, in the end.
Yeah, there does seem to be a lot of extraneous character arcs that don't really go anywhere and just sort of trail off and die, which is kind of seems like why it's trying to, it points to be more of a kind of holistic study of what's going on, but it doesn't actually work when you try and mix it with some sort of plot developments that just don't make it just doesn't hang together very well as either of the two sort of threads.
Yeah, and also when it comes to the investigative side of it, it's just full of really silly and unbelievable conveniences plot-wise that, like, yeah, you were just too lazy to bother writing a good way for that to happen, weren't you? Or that's happened just so you could have something else turn up later. It's just lazily written and just doesn't hang together at all.
Certain developments are entirely inexplicable. The whole ending smacks of something that just they couldn't think of a proper way to come up with an ending, and it's just bolted on. It's like, how's this going to work as an ending? Let's have a fight in a bar for no good reason whatsoever.
That was the problem with Smoking Aces as well, suggesting that maybe Joe Carnahan had, well, it wasn't the only problem with Smoking Aces, but it was certainly the worst facet of it was a completely pointless ending that was appearing to be trying to have some sort of deep, meaningful twist, which it quite clearly didn't. Maybe Joe Carnahan had one good story in him and he's actually not as great a writer as I'd hoped he might have been at first.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not for anybody who does still want to watch, although hopefully this would have put them off of wasting their time. I won't give it away what happens even though it's near the beginning, but there is one piece of evidence that is found just after Ray Tierney discovers that this will be important to find. It's found by the bad guys because it's convenient for them to do so they can therefore hide the evidence, and it's never ever explained how they found it, just it's convenient that they did at that time. It's just, that's horribly, horribly lazy.
Ooh. Alrighty, we'll leave that at that then. Doesn't sound too riveting. Having last explored the political underbelly of the US in 1995's Nixon, it's been 13 years before Oliver Stone has seen fit to return to one of his favourite topics, this time letting loose the cannons on George W. Bush in his film W. As if watching George W. Bush in real life wasn't pantomime enough, I've heard reports that this sort of borders more on impersonation and comedy than an actual serious biographical study. Drew, what are your thoughts on W?
Well, I wouldn't say it bordered on comedy although
obviously there's some humour to be derived from the character himself, regardless of the circumstance. But
yes, and I was sort of not looking forward to this film, but certainly interested enough, having read some reviews and heard the general gist of it be that it's Oliver Stone who you think would absolutely destroy a George W. Bush in a film about him, actually portraying a sympathetic version,
which I have heard also, and which strikes me as incredibly strange.
And it's completely inaccurate. I went in thinking that George W. Bush and his entire cabinet were a shower of pricks and came out feeling exactly the same way, so it's certainly not changed my mind on anything. And it just seems a completely pointless film. He was George W. Bush. He made some very bad decisions. We know this. What are you telling me in your film? He's useless. Yeah, we also know this. He was a failed businessman. Yep, this is all old news. The film's ended. Okay. And I can't really say much about this film. It's utterly pointless and just largely gives George W. Bush enough rope to hang himself, but that's been done so many times. The man must be a zombie by now.
He gives himself a 20-metre coil of rope every time he appears on bloody television, doesn't he? I'd heard reports as well that this is perhaps not Oliver Stone's best achievement in filmmaking by a long shot, but...
not at all, no.
Certainly, if it's going to stand at all, there have been sort of, you know, Oscar talk for a couple of the performances involved. Is it worthwhile seeing on strength of performance alone, Scott, or is that not enough to carry it?
No.
It's just too dull.
There are a few very good impersonations going on in it, but then again, if that's what you want, you could just listen to Rory Bremner or something. George W. Bush is always sort of saying that history will have to judge him and we're not in a place where we can judge his achievements and all that now, and that kind of feels the same way about this film, because there is no point to this film because literally everything that's important in it just happened and I can remember them very well. If this film was made about 20 years down the line, it may have some sort of interest to most people, but unless you've been asleep for the last 8 years, you've pretty much got the gist of what's going on with this already, and it doesn't actually add any insight as to what's going on. There's no startling revelations as to the internal workings of a Bush government that we've not already heard umpteen times from umpteen other people. So it's somewhat baffling. It's perhaps almost worth seeing just for Richard Dreyfuss's Dick Cheney.
Which is scary.
He's played with such an evil streak that if he was a pantomime villain, he wouldn't be believable. But he's just a cackling, insane maniac, which is fun to watch and kind of frightening, given that he was actually, you know, the most powerful man in the world for most of the time.
Yeah, it did look uncannily like him in this film too, which is kind of disconcerting.
Does it perhaps suffer from an extent at the hands of Fahrenheit 9/11, before which, I mean, we knew a lot about George Bush, but most of his sort of shady dealings, that's where a lot of people would first have learned about sort of like his failed businesses and whatnot. Joe Public on the street might not have known that before.
I don't know.
Sorry, shit question. Yeah, would it be a more enjoyable film without that prior knowledge? Although obviously in his public life, George W. Bush has been put under such a microscope that he's, you know, he hasn't really been able to do anything without us finding out about it. But certainly his backstory is...
If you have the slightest interest in politics, you're going to know everything that's on in this film. Then if you don't have the slightest interest in politics, you're not going to be interested in this film anyway. So
It seems strange to me then that, given Oliver Stone's obvious interest in politics, and I mean he's been quite militant about the subject in the past and whatnot. You know, Nixon didn't really reveal anything shocking or provoke any sort of controversial thoughts, but it was a fairly warts and all portrayal of the man, and JFK obviously stoked some controversy, perhaps without much necessity. It's obviously a passion for Oliver Stone, so why is he chosen to produce something so bland this time around, given that this is perhaps the single best opportunity a filmmaker's had in history to completely unleash the cannons on someone in authority?
Well, see, the thing is, I'm not sure what you would do in this sort of film that could bring that out, because
we know everything already anyway. But
no, I mean, what he portrays here is what I actually believe that George Bush is. I don't think he's an evil man who's setting out to unleash hell upon the world. I think he genuinely believes that this is the best thing to be done, which is perhaps scarier. But he's not an evil man who's sitting around plotting the downfall of everyone around him or anything like that.
Dick Cheney clearly is, but Bush isn't, just misguided and stupid.
So that's what it shows. So I mean, if you wanted to actually unleash cannons, what would you do about it? Because you can't point that at Bush. He's not doing things that he doesn't believe in, so you can't say that about him. You'd have to do what things like Michael Moore have done, which is attacking him externally, but that wouldn't be this film. and it wouldn't be what Oliver Stone's done in his previous works either.
Yeah, there's some, the only other thing I'd like to say about this, which is I guess might be where some of the suggestions that this showed Bush in a sympathetic light come from, is that they do seem to be suggesting that some of the problems with George Bush are the serious daddy issues he has, because that's quite a strong theme in the film. But I don't pay any or give any credence to that at all, because he's the president of the United States. If he's got daddy issues, he shouldn't be there.
Well, he should be there full stop, but hey.
Well, yes, we know that, but so I'm not buying the fact that he's a bit of a tit because he's always trying to please George H.W. Bush. He's become president and then president again, so it just doesn't fly, but it does seem to be suggested in the film.
I don't know. I've always had some suspicion about his relationship with his dad ever since that fantastic quote about Saddam Hussein, where one of W's justifications for invading Iraq was, he tried to kill my daddy. At what stage did Saddam Hussein try to kill George Bush Sr.?
Especially since, suggestion in this film, I'm not quite sure what, we also don't know quite what the truth was, but that George H.W. Bush didn't feel that the Gulf War hadn't been finished. He's like, we've defeated Saddam Hussein, and we go any further, it's mission creep. We've done what we set out to do, just free Kuwait and sort of send Saddam back into his own country, and then they left it at that.
I don't know, strange. It seems like a bit of a wasted opportunity, which was an unnecessary opportunity in the first place. Most bizarre, this week's now almost obligatory Asian film is Tao Ming Chong, or Warlords as it will be known to you and I. It stars Jet Li and Andy Lau and Takeshi Kaneshiro, and it's a tale of three blood brothers who struggle in the midst of war and political upheaval, or at least that's what someone's written about it on IMDb. Scott, how accurate is that?
It's pretty much the truth. I can't really argue with any of the details.
Excellent.
Yeah, last week we were talking about John Woo's Red Cliffs, which is a feudal epic of set in a time of civil war in China, and this is the other flip side of the coin. Whereas Red Cliffs was all very hero-esque in its sort of big, glorious, glossy, colourful, wushu-type depiction of battles, the Warlords is brown. Very, very brown. It's a very bleak view of the business of staving people's heads in. Set round about the turn of the 19th century, I believe, it's another Civil War film. You know it's going to be one of those war is hell sort of films when Jet Li starts the film basically by pulling himself out from under a pile of corpses which he's been hiding in, and it continues on much those lines. He basically finds himself in a small town which has reverted to banditry, and as it's the only way they can get enough food to feed their people, he eventually convinces them to actually join an army against another army that had been oppressing them, and off they go and have on the back of a new army which goes off and does all sorts of heroic feats over the course of a year or so. The main dynamic is Jet Li's external general, the boss of the village, played by Andy Lau, and Takeshi Kaneshiro, who's essentially a kind of lieutenant of the two. The three form a close bond, become blood brothers, and over the course of the film, it's probably more about the strains in the relationship between those three than it is about the actual fighting, which is not to say that there aren't sort of massive epic battles and whatnot. There's certainly enough extras lying about pretending to be dead, so at least as much as there were in Red Cliffs. So there is a lot of scale to the piece, although it is a very grim and bleak film. It doesn't have any of the sort of glorious, heroic feel that even Jet Li's earlier film does. This always feels fairly almost gritty, if it weren't for the fact that to appease fans of Jet Li and this sort of thing, it does have lots of fairly fantastical set piece battles where he's chopping off people's arms left, like right and centre and whatnot, which is well enough. I mean, I think the main draw of it is really more that it's a film based on the acting between Andy Lau and Jet Li. It's based more around emotional performances rather than just fighting, which is certainly unusual. I mean, certainly if you've only been looking at Jet Li's recent Hollywood work where he punches people in the head and does very little else, there's nothing in here that I can point at to say that I didn't like, apart from the fact that it's so goddamn brown. It's just brown, dirty, bleak, and fairly depressing.
Unremittingly brown.
I believe that's the point. I mean, it's not really trying to show you that war is a glorious and epic thing, which is very different in tone from pretty much any sort of battle film set in China that I can think of lately. They do tend to amp up the glorious aspects of warfare rather than the grim reality of it. That's the only thing that I can think of that was putting me off the film, and it almost trivial to say it, but it did actually put me off the film. It kept bringing me back out of it rather than absorbing me into it. So if you like brown more than I do, then you'll love this film. I can only sort of say that it's pretty good. Pretty good, but very brown.
I'm a big fan of brown. I might have to check it out. Drew, would you be in concurrence with that?
It was all right. I didn't enjoy it all that much. I certainly found the last half hour rather tedious. Again, the proviso that being that I was quite tired when I watched this, possibly not the best position again to be in. But the fact it was about, brown as it was about the horrible side of war rather than the glory is actually generally more appealing to me because I don't like films that glorify war because it's generally not a good thing. But yeah, it's all right. Even silly bits aside with the world's sharpest sword where lots of people's legs get chopped off in one sweep, amusing as that is, and the domino effect cannons, but I don't really have a lot more to say to add what Scott said. It's all right. And again, nice to see Jet Li actually trying some of that acting stuff.
So overall, then, a bit of a dull, bloody week for films, then?
Yeah, not the most exciting week in recent memory, anyway.
Oh, dear, what are we going to do? Scott, what have we got coming up next week?
Max Payne. It'll have shooting things in it.
Christ. Well, never mind. Yeah, so it looks like another shit week next week. Never mind. I must apologise for my lack of preparation tonight, everybody. I've been extremely busy the last few days. Never mind. Take what you will from that lot. I'll probably take none of them. We'll see what happens next week, and we'll be back to give you our pointed opinions. So until then, I've been Craig Eastman, and as always in Glasgow, it's goodbye from Scott Morris.
Goodbye.
And as always in Falkirk, it's goodbye from...
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. Keep it real.
Stop being a zombie.
That sounds like the end of what was that bloody Strike It Lucky.
Oh good, we are safe, but for how long?